There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome. It is episode 108 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley in my sort of festive jumper. David Cameron Walker's here.
Hello. No festive jumper.
No festive jumper. And also joining us on our penultimate show before Christmas, if that works, is Adam Williams.
Hello. And no festive jumper for me because rather disappointingly, I have ordered a special Ipswich Town jumper line from the club shop about a week and a half ago, and it still hasn't arrived.
Mick McCarthy in like a blue Santa's outfit with a beard.
With a beard and a white beard and a blue and white hat. No, it's not quite. It's a reindeer sporting an Ipswich scarf.
Lovely. Okay, before we go any further this week, let's tell you to go to audible.co.uk/goingup, where you can download yourself, as I didn't really quite get the drift of what you were saying at the end of the show last week, an audiobook for Christmas.
Yes.
Explain.
Treat yourself.
So go to audible.co.uk/goingup.
And while you're wrapping all your presents and getting everything ready, running around the shops, getting all your last minute presents on Christmas Eve, you can have the soothing sounds of an audiobook of your choice in your ears.
There you go. So audible.co.uk/goingup. So later in the show, we're going to speak to you a bit more, Adam, about Ipswich this season. We'll also talk about the FSF Awards, which happened this week. We're all raring to go for that. We'll see how we get on. We're also going to talk to Jim, who's going to be joining us on the phone because he was at the KP on Saturday for Leicester Burnley, the big game of the weekend in the Football League. But we're going to start, and sometimes we get accused of being a bit Watford heavy on this show, but we are going to start with Watford this week.
We've tried to tone it down a little bit.
Obviously, you support Watford. You look at the results from the weekend. The one standout result was Sheffield Wednesday keeping their first clean sheet of the season. And we're in mid-December at Vicarage Road. Five successive home defeats for Watford. And what's that? Your worst home run in 23 years?
Yeah.
Something like that. Okay, right. Well, on the line to talk to us about it, we've got a couple of people who should be able to tell us a bit more. Frank Smith is the deputy sports editor at the Watford Observer. And Lionel Burney is a journalist, Watford fan, and the editor of Tales from the Vicarage. Guys, thank you very much for coming on the show. Before we go any further, though, and get into it, I'm going to play you something.
Here we go. DC,
you might have had a feel of this was going to happen. From our Championship preview show at the start of the season, I asked DC who he was tipping to win the Championship.
I am really going to regret this. You're going to play it back
to me. You're going to go for Watford, aren't you?
But I am, for once. I'm going to defy my natural feeling to be pessimistic and downplay expectations. But why should I? We should be optimistic. As I explained earlier on, we were playing the best football in the league last season, and pound for pound, we've got a better team this season. Zola is a wiser manager. It was always the plan this year to go up. Watford will be champions.
You still sticking to that?
Oh, God, I'm cringing when I hear that now. Oh, I mean, I think all Watford fans had reason for optimism at the start of the season, but it's very easy to say in hindsight now. I think it was tempting to sort of airbrush over the loss of players like Vidra and Chalabar. And we didn't know that we were going to lose Abdi, and I think those are the three real key things in terms of the team that's gone wrong. I couldn't look any more stupid, really, could I?
Frank, what do you think are the main differences then to last season? What's gone wrong so far?
Well, I think there's quite a few small contributing factors that all culminate in the sort of the bigger problem. I think you almost need to differentiate between Watford at home and Watford away, because I think away from home they haven't been that bad this year. I think they're unbeaten in four or something along those lines, and I think they're close to beating Borough and Brighton. In terms of being at home, I think their main problem seems to be that when opposition teams put 10 men behind the ball, they just can't break them down. It's not a completely new problem, because I think last year they struggled a bit at times with that, and I think when Watford have had chances at home, they just haven't taken them. They haven't been clinical enough. And I think Saturday was quite similar to other games, where they played well in the first half and then just you know, fell apart in the second half, and that's happened quite a few times, and it's especially on Saturday when teams put men behind the ball, it's important you remain patient and you know, you don't panic, whereas the other day they seemed a bit desperate in terms of, you know, trying to get the goal. And on top of that, when they do lose possession, they've been far too easy to break down. To be honest, there's about another three or four things that I could pick out. There's quite a lot that's been going wrong so far this season, to be honest.
So, Lionel, let's bring you in. What's your take on the current problems at the moment that are engulfing the club?
Yeah, I think I'll sympathise with something David said about optimism being very high at the start of the season, because I think there were grounds for that optimism. And when the first couple of games got underway and Watford won 1-0 at Birmingham, which is a difficult place to go, particularly on the opening day, and then demolished Bournemouth in terms of the scoreline, 6-1 at home, although those who were at the match would have noted that, you know, there were sort of issues perhaps with the team, but you could have put that down to the new faces still bedding in. So I don't think the optimism was misplaced, but I think as the summer has given way to autumn and now the sort of depths of winter, the issue with the team is that there's just no pace in it. There's just no cutting edge that was evident last year with the three that David mentioned, Vidra up front and Chaloba and Abdi in midfield. And Frank's point there about needing to be patient when breaking down teams who come to Vicarage Road to defend, knowing that there's no real goal threat in the side at the moment. I disagree with that, because what Watford need to do is up the tempo more. They need to play a game that actually hurts the opposition. And at the moment, we're clutching at straws saying we created this chance or we created that chance. But really, we haven't actually got at these teams. Particularly, you can't really make much of a defence for the case that we've lost at home 3-0 against Yeovil and 1-0 against Sheffield Wednesday. No disrespect to those two sides, but they're the bottom two sides in the division.
It seems to me that, you know, at the start of this bad run, particularly at home, there were a couple of games where the Derby game in particular, where it was a pretty close run thing. You know, there's the game at Brighton as well, where we could well have won the game had the ball over the line decision been different, and the last minute goal at Middlesbrough. There was, you know, a couple of results which nearly went away but didn't, and then, you know, a couple of bad performances and injuries follow at home, and then all of a sudden you haven't won in ages and you're in the midst of a bad run and confidence is gone. Now Frank, what do you think Zola can, you know, needs to do to get that confidence back, and do you think he can do it himself?
Well, I hope he can. I think the main thing, I think when you do have issues is you know, recognising that you have problems. And to be fair to him, he has been pretty honest, and he has accepted and recognised that there have been problems. So I think at least he's not burying his head in the sand. And to be fair to him, in the last couple of weeks or so, I think the team have been far too open at times, and he tried to change formation to do that, and it seems to have helped a little bit. And some managers under pressure would maybe, you know, especially at this stage when they've tried different things, would maybe blame the players. And whilst he's been critical, he hasn't done that. So I think credit to him in that respect. The thing is, like you say, it has been a bad run, and I'm hoping he can, because he is a gentleman, and I think, like you mentioned there with those two games, we haven't been terrible all the time. There's been kind of flashes, but it has been too kind of few and far between. But, you know, in terms of Lionel's point about the pace, I think he's right, and I think Watford could have benefited from having a bit more pace up front. But I do have a bit of sympathy for Zola as well, in terms of when you look at the type of players that have gone, the likes of Hogg and Vidra, people like that, maybe not a direct replacement for Vidra, but the likes of, you know, Irony, who was brought in, you know, hopeful that he could fill that holding midfield role. He hasn't performed, even though on paper he looked like a decent acquisition with about, I think it's like 10 years La Liga experience. And Acuna, he struggled a little bit. I know in the summer I spoke to a kind of a head of recruitment at one of the other championship clubs, and he said that they were looking at him and that he backed him to be a big success. So there's been a few, and well, I guess Fabrini as well, you know, an Italy international, and he hasn't really maybe shown his best. So I think there's a few players who, you know, have underperformed since they've come in, and I'm hoping he can turn it around. And I think he, in the last couple of weeks, he has tried changing the formation, and he has tried changing the personnel, for example, in the midfield, where for a lot of the time. I don't think the balance has been right, but that seemed a little bit better for a while on Saturday. I'm hopefully can turn it around. I guess it's maybe the next couple of weeks and the next few games will ultimately be telling.
Lionel, do you perhaps think that what Frank was saying there about changing the personnel over the last few weeks, might that actually be part of the problem? So I'm just looking at the stats in terms of who's played and how many appearances the Watford players have made this season. There isn't one player that's been ever present from the starting lineup this season. The defence in particular has chopped and changed a lot. Now, it's not all Zola's fault. There's been injuries, there's been suspensions, there's been lone players that have come in, but we haven't had a settled side this season. Should Zola perhaps just stick with an 11 and persevere with them for a few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to be fairly old-fashioned about these things, particularly in a league like the Championship, where it's a slog. You get onto a role, and once you're on that role, you don't want to tinker too much. And I think Zola's management techniques last year were when we came unstuck was when he did things wholesale, like he'd change both of the front players, or he'd sort of rip up the midfield and put in a different lineup because he thought perhaps we could roll Bristol City over away, or we could get a good result at Peterborough without having to put everybody in at once. And I think that's one of the key issues, is that there has been an awful lot of chopping and changing with the lineup. The Sheffield Wednesday match, he reverted for the first time in a long, long time to four players at the back, presumably, as Frank said, to try and sort of stop them being hit on the counter-attack, perhaps, as much as they were by Yeovil. But then with five in midfield and Troy Deeney up front. Now, if you're the Sheffield Wednesday players looking at that team sheet, thinking, well, they're playing one forward and then a lot of very similar kind of almost holding midfielders. Really, Anya is the only one that will go past people and actually hurt them with any kind of energy. It's quite an easy system to play against, and I think thrashing around for an answer when the opposition, you know, the matches come so thick and fast. We've got the Christmas period coming up, you know, Millwall, Queen's Park Rangers, Yeovil again. You know, suddenly you're looking at, you know, what will the answer be? And supporters tend to think in terms of, you know, one change will be the thing that changes our fortunes. Maybe, you know, put Forestieri back in, or, you know, when McEachran comes back, that will be better. But I think the problems are fundamental. Talking about changes of personnel, one of the things that hasn't really been addressed too much by supporters, perhaps, is the fact that last year's assistant coach, Giancarlo Corradini, went. And one of the areas where, as football supporters, we're kind of not very well served in this country is we don't really understand too much about how clubs actually work. But it does strike me, just looking from the outside and from a distance, the departure of Corradini, maybe that has more of a sort of significant effect than perhaps we appreciate.
Frank, what's the mood like among the supporters throughout this run? Are they particularly against Zola amongst this, or is it split down the middle? I mean, what was the reaction after the latest defeat at Vicarage Road yesterday?
I think it's quite hard to almost get a fair reflection, because obviously the ones that you'll hear are the ones that are on Twitter and, you know, and Facebook and things like that, and quite often they're maybe a bit more extreme than a lot of the other fans. So I think it's always quite hard to judge. But obviously, if you don't win for nine games and you lose, what is it, five at home, then, and you don't score in four of those, then yeah, it's not great. I think there is still you know, a section of the supporters that are happy to stick with Zola, and I think it has been quite mixed. There's some that I think I saw somebody mention yesterday, you know, we need to get rid of Zola because we might not stay in this division. You're always going to get extremes like that, which I think it's a bit extreme. But no, I think the patience with a lot of fans is wearing thin.
Lionel, I know you've written about the owners in your new book. Do you think they'll be patient with Zola?
Well, I haven't actually. I got an Italian journalist called Paolo Tomaselli, who works for one of the Italian sports papers, to write about Gianpaolo Pozzo and Gino Pozzo, because he's covered Udinese for years and he knows them well. And I think they will be patient to a point, but I think if you read between the lines of Paolo's chapter, the plan is to get Watford into the Premier League as quickly as possible, and they will assess the best way to do that. And I do know that the feeling from Italy, if you like, is that they have provided the resources that should be enough. I mean, Frank talked about the other people within the game being very positive about some of the players, Acuna and Fabbrini, and there is absolutely no doubt that a lot of these players, I'd add Faroni to that list, that a lot of them are technically highly competent players, but the Championship is a strange league, and without sounding sort of agricultural about it, the team needs more than just kind of an array of midfielders who are very comfortable on the ball. It needs more of an enforcer, and in terms of whether the Pozzos will look at what's going on the pitch and decide whether the manager should carry the can for that or not, I'm not convinced. I think if Zola were to go, I think it would be of his own accord first.
Frank, I was just going to add to what Lionel was saying. Now I agree with everything he said. I think the balance in terms of the midfield in particular, but also through the whole side, has been a bit of an issue. And you mentioned the term there, enforcer. I think that's spot on. I think that has been one of the main problems. And when I was speaking to people around the club, they didn't expect Jonathan Hogg to leave this summer, and also he decided to go due to being so far away from his family, which, when I spoke to him a couple of years ago, he actually mentioned that it was very hard for him leaving his family up in the northeast. So I do think that you know, the balance and the lack of a bit of sort of British steel and a bit of Championship know-how, I think that has been a major problem as well.
Right, just following on from what Lionel's talking about the owners, and you know, it was kind of the thing that all the non-Watford fans last season who were talking about when they saw the rise up the table and this new way of doing things that was quite alien to English football in terms of loaning all the players from Udinese and Granada, and everyone was predicting doom for this summer when they're all going to go back and we'd be left with no squad. We kept telling them all that it wouldn't be like that, and to a degree it hasn't been. We signed most of the players in the summer, but we'll have lost a few key ones, as we've said, and also new ones arrived. And do you think that now this could perhaps be a problem, looking at it, you know, in hindsight? Zola, if it is Zola or whoever's in charge of Watford in the coming years, are they likely to have a turnover of players every summer where you are going to have to take each season on its own, as opposed to something that's building over a number of years? It might be hard for managers who are in charge of Watford to build a consistent squad and to keep moving forward if there is, even if it's only three or four new players coming in each season. Those players could be key, and you know, it could be very difficult.
Yeah, I think it can be a problem, especially when the players that come in underperform. If Acuna had hit the ground running and contributed with, you know, well, to be fair to me, he hasn't had a lot, not many chances, but say he had scored five or six, and Fabbrini had also made the sort of impact that we saw in a couple of appearances in pre-season, and Irini, you know, someone with 10 years La Liga experience who, you know, Zola spoke so positively about when he did arrive. If those sort of guys performed, a lot of the problems that we're kind of talking about now could have been addressed. You know, someone like, you know, the lack of an enforcer, you know, Irini potentially could have been that player. You know, someone that can break down defences when, you know, when they're sitting deep and tight and space is tight. You know, that potentially could be the Fabbrini, Forestieri mould. So I think that individual players underperforming hasn't helped. But then also, like Lionel mentioned earlier, in terms of the dynamic of the squad, I think there has been certain areas which have been lacking from the start. And it goes back to that point of how much control does the head coach have over the recruitment. Obviously, they reiterated the point at the fans forum that they work as a team and it's a kind of a group decision. But there has been a lack of pace, and that's something that, well, is that Zola's fault, or did Zola maybe ask for that, but the rest disagreed? And if that's one of the main problems, you know, and Zola loses his job, then is that a bit unfair because he doesn't ultimately have control over the recruitment side of things? And that could be a problem, the recruitment, you know, policy of the club, because ultimately the head coach is going to, you know, live or die by what happens. And if they're not recruiting in a way which either he sees fit or what's best for the club, then it could be a problem.
I'm just looking at the fixtures, and I noticed that on Saturday, Watford go to Ipswich, and Adam, you're an Ipswich fan, I know you've got a question about this.
Well, I was going to say, Lionel, do you think that this season's now at a stage with this recent run that I suppose you can almost write off the thoughts of promotional playoffs, or being an Ipswich fan and a team that's on a recently decent run and has climbed the table? Do you think that's only a matter of what it takes, really, just getting a few results together and you can climb the table in no time?
Well, I think Watford fans experience this incredible run that sort of spanned the winter, Christmas and New Year period last year that propelled them briefly into the top two, and really only the last couple of weeks of the season they slipped into the playoffs and then obviously lost the playoff final. So, I mean, nothing in the Championship is ever decided until you're completely out of it. I mean, you couldn't necessarily rule out Watford going on a run of sort of 8 or 10 games in which they completely reverse their fortunes. Unfortunately, the evidence currently appearing before our eyes on the pitch doesn't offer us a great deal of hope for that.
Frank, I want to try and sprinkle a bit of optimism into this discussion. I mean, it's not going very well for us at the moment, but when we try and get a bit of perspective, look at this season, last season, and the season's gone by, you know, until the Pozzos arrived at Watford, a seemingly yearly occurrence was our best player would be sold in the summer. You know, we'd have seemingly annual threats of administration. There were managerial changes. Mackay left to a better job. Dyche, you know, was unfortunately sacked, but perhaps not really his fault. But, you know, and you had the Laurence Bassini era as well, which was fraught with problems. There was a lot of negativity around Watford, and it was a difficult time sometimes to be a Watford fan. We're always struggling with relegation, and even if we don't go up this season, even if this season does turn out to be a bit of a disappointment, Watford as a club are in a better position than they've been for a long time.
Definitely, yeah. You mentioned there, you know, off the field, the club's going very well. You know, the East Stand, which has been, you know, everybody's been waiting for such a long time, that's getting done. The southwest corner will get done after that. All of those things are all positive. Off the field, the accounts look a lot better. And if you look at Granada and you look at Udinese, and, you know, the Pozzos bring long-term success. And whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whether it's the year after, I'm pretty confident Watford will get promoted to the Premier League. And I think it is a matter of time. They, you know, those guys have the track record to do that. And having met Gino Pozzo and spoken to him for around half hour, I was amazed at how intelligent he was in terms of, you know, football intelligence. He was such an impressive individual, and that's one point that, you know, Scott Duxbury and Gianfranco Zola keep pointing out, is that Gino Pozzo really does know his stuff. He's not one of those owners who, you know, have got a lot of money and, you know, they're irrational with it and they don't really understand football and how it works. You know, this guy knows what he's doing. He knows how to bring success to other clubs, and they've proven that at Granada and Udinese, and I'm sure that all of the mistakes that are being made this year and were made last year, I'm sure they will, you know, Gino Pozzo and, you know, whether it's Zola or somebody else, that they will learn from these mistakes, and I'm pretty confident eventually that they will gain promotion. Like Lionel says, you can't rule out anything in the Championship, and you know, if you look at the quality of Watford's squad, you wouldn't rule them out going 7 games unbeaten or 8 games unbeaten. And you win 5-6 games in the Championship and, you know, your season looks completely different.
Lots of games, obviously, over the next few weeks, with it being Christmas as well. Lionel, do you reckon there'll be any activity in January in terms of changing things around if this run carries on the next couple of weeks?
I really don't know. I mean, there's been a few murmurings from Italy that there might be one or two reinforcements to come in. But at the moment, you would be more concerned, as I said before, you know, there's already a lot of players to choose from, but there isn't a team yet out of those players. And I think if we look back at the start of last season, that was my big concern, was that Zola was being put in charge of a kind of football equivalent of ready, steady, cook, with a load of disparate ingredients in a carrier bag for him to try and conjure some gourmet meal from, and working out whether, you know, custard powder will go with tuna. And he managed to do that. He managed to create a football team largely because of the individuals that he had to work with. This year, the bag of ingredients, it doesn't appear to suggest a sort of a menu topping meal, if I can stretch
keep
that
going,
analogy
keep
any
going.
Further. I mean, you wouldn't rule out necessarily a sort of throw of the dice, but I wouldn't have thought that they would do anything particularly drastic. I mean, just picking up on what Frank said about how healthy things look from the perspective of the Pozzos owning the club. I mean, these are people with an impressive business pedigree. They don't do things in a hurry. They're not particularly rash. You know, they've made multi-millions from the sale of and purchase of companies. But I don't think that they will just keep throwing they won't just keep throwing players at Watford and hope that something happens. There will, it maybe doesn't look like it at the moment, but there will be a sort of method to what they do. And they may well decide that in January, you know, look, you've got enough. We'll reassess in the summer.
Frank, there has been a few bits and pieces in the Watford Observer recently that suggest that there could be perhaps a striker coming in.
I've been told by reliable sources that they are definitely targeting a striker, and that striker will be in addition to the regular, you know, what's already in the squad. And on top of that, Zola's recognised that they need the kind of enforcer midfielder. He was hoping that would be George Thorne, and in previous games, and you know, he has looked impressive. I thought he had a very poor game at the weekend, but no, those are the two areas that they are really targeting. I think Lionel made a point there about they're not going to just keep throwing players at it, and I think if you look at the Watford squad, they're better than not winning 9 games in a row and not winning at home for 5 games. And whilst they will bring in maybe a striker and try and secure Thorne on a longer deal or maybe bring in another enforcer, but I don't think there's going to be wholesale change. And I think it's one of those where Zola might be given a couple more players and then he'll be asked to turn it round, and it will then be up to him to use the kind of the tools at his disposal to turn it around.
Lionel, while we've got you here, I just wanted to ask you about the new book, Tales from the Vicarage, Volume 2. The first volume came out last year. Each chapter was by a different person who had a story to tell about Watford or a different connection with Watford. Who are the sort of people you've got in this year's volume?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Paolo Tomaselli, a journalist in Italy who's got a lot of experience covering Serie A and knows the Pozzos pretty well. He interviewed Gianpaolo Pozzo, who is the father of Gino, and Andrea Carnevali, who's kind of in charge of Udinese's global scouting network, and also Gianluca Nanni, who's kind of the Pozzo's man on the ground in Watford, I suppose. So, I mean, that to me, having seen the Pozzos here for a year, you know, that really sort of added to my understanding of who they are, where they've come from, how they made their money, which were all kind of questions that we didn't really have a particular handle on. So for me, that was one of the standout chapters. We've also got Mike Waters from the Daily Mirror, who's looked back 30 years to a trip he made to go and see Watford play Levski Spartak in Sofia in the UEFA Cup, which is the Europa League before it was rubbish. He's kind of painted a picture of an incredible trip behind the Iron Curtain, you know, at a time when East and West were solidly divided and all sorts of things happened to him on that trip. He was offered an evening with a Bulgarian's wife in exchange for his Watford sweater. perhaps not something that happens too often these days, I don't know. The idea is to kind of get a collection of writers with different styles. We've got some journalists and bloggers who all have some kind of connection with Watford. So it's been a really good fun thing to put together again, and hopefully people who get it for Christmas will enjoy it.
Nice little plug at the end. Brilliant. Thanks for coming on, guys. We appreciate that. That is Frank Smith, Deputy Sports Editor at the Watford Observer, and Lionel Burney, journalist, Watford fan, and editor of Tales from the Vicarage. Next, we're going to turn our attention to the top of the Championship, talk a bit of Leicester and Burnley, and as Adam is here, a bit of Ipswich too. Okay, so I'm going to call this section of the show a little bit of a bits and pieces type bit. You know when you run out of food and you've got nothing left in the house? This is what this is on the show. We're not doing one big section like we've just done. We're going to do a couple at once. So Jim is on the line.
Hello, mate.
You were at the big game of the weekend in the Football League, which was third against first on Saturday. It was at the time anyway. Leicester 1, Burnley 1. You went ahead thanks to that David Nugent penalty. But that man, Danny Ings, on target again. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed with Burnley. I've seen them a couple of times this year and I knew they were going to offer us quite a bit of a challenge. I thought we had the best of it in the first half, but I think we paid for our missed chances. Could have been a couple of goals to the good and probably should have been by half-time. And I think Sean Dyche just galvanised his troops a little bit coming up after half-time and said, look, we could be 2 or 3 down here. We're not. Let's go out there. And obviously an immediate impact with Danny Ings equalising just after half-time.
Could have lost it though, couldn't you? Danny Ings really should have scored when he was through in the second half.
Yeah, that was probably their other obviously clear cut chance. I mean, we had a few of our own. There's one Jamie Vardy chance at the end where I think it was Lloyd Dyer went to the byline and stood it up for him, and he headed it wide from all of 4 yards with the keeper kind of taken out of the equation because he'd gone to the front post to stop the shot. So But I think both teams can feel a little aggrieved, but probably a draw was quite a fair result, I think.
Had you been worrying a little with those couple of defeats in the last few games?
A little bit, but I think with the Championship, you know, the whole season is going to be a lot of ups and downs for a lot of teams, and we're no strangers to having a complete nightmare after Christmas and New Year, as we saw last year, and kind of completely dropping out of contention. So I was fairly pleased to get another point on the board. A little disappointed, but at the end of the day, Burnley are top of the league, and if we can get a point against them at home, then, you know, it's not the worst result. There are plenty of teams they'll go and beat this year. So I wasn't too disappointed by it all. We've just got a lot to look forward to in the next couple of weeks, but we've just got to keep our eye on the ball. It's Manchester City on Tuesday, and then QPR on Saturday again, so another chance to watch us on TV.
I was going to ask you about that. Given the position that you are in the league, you're smack bang in the automatic promotion race at the turn of the year, how important then do you think the game against Man City and the FA Cup game against Stoke are? Are you bothered about them?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's difficult not to be bothered by such big ties, you know, because it has been so long since we played. Well, I say so long relatively in terms of, you know, we've been down to League One and back up to the Championship again since we did play Premier League football on a weekly basis. Manchester City obviously is a huge game. It's the first time I can remember that we've sold out the ground in quite a while. But Pearson's made no secret of the fact that the league form is the priority, and he'll make changes accordingly, and we'll just roll with it. I mean, it's only really honouring the talents of the players that have got us there so far, so it's a fair decision in my view anyway.
Just one on Burnley, now that you've seen them playing.
Is this about Kieran Trippier and your man love for him?
I'm not going to mention it. Man of the match, isn't he? He got from Sky at the weekend, another good performance. But I was just going to say, there are still some people who are, given that no one expected Burnley to do as well as they have done this season, who's still predicting them to perhaps fall off, and maybe yourselves or maybe even Derby or someone like that could take that other spot alongside QPR if that's the way it's going to be. But do you think, having seen them, they've got what it takes to be genuine automatic promotion contenders this season?
If I was a Burnley fan, I'd be thoroughly encouraged by what I saw on Saturday in terms of, you're not always going to play your best, and they still managed to grind a point out of it, and they managed to come out second half and come at us. And I'm going to be honest, we're probably going to have one of the strongest records in the league at home this year. There aren't many teams that will come and take any points away from the keeper, let alone three or even one in their case. So I think they'll be there or thereabouts. I still have lingering doubts about whether they're automatic promotion places. Maybe they will be dropping down to third or fourth over the course of the season, but certainly that partnership of Sam Vokes and Danny Ings up front looks more than capable. I think a lot of people at the King Power were probably quite surprised, similar to DC's point, in that looked at the table and went, oh, Burnley will be the pace setters, but they'll kind of burn off. But they have got quality in that team. Michael Keightley was decent. Trippier, as you said, put in a good performance. And they've got a solid back line as well, and one that repelled one of the most potent attacks in the league. So, you know, I can't do anything but praise him, really, from what I saw on Saturday.
Only the best cutting-edge analysis of the Football League on this show. Adam's got a question for you.
Jim, there were a couple of Leicester fans that I know who are a bit downbeat about that result actually yesterday afternoon.
No, that's not the question you were going to ask.
What was I going to ask?
You're going to ask about the X Factor.
Oh, no, I was going to ask, why are you watching that instead of Sports Personality?
Oh, because there's a representative of Leicester, isn't there, in the X Factor final?
Yeah, and also,
that's what you're going to say.
And also,
we've got to it.
Yeah, I've just remembered what it was. Also, who were those two who were in the crowd last night egging her on?
That was Geoffrey Slupp and Liam Moore. They don't give the best interviews.
No, they didn't say anything.
I think it's fair to say. And also, Caroline Flack got the name of our mascot wrong, which kind of incensed the lot.
Yeah, what did she call him?
She called it
Foxy the Fox or something, when it's actually Philbo.
Philbo the Fox.
Oh, Philbo.
That's something ridiculous. But Felix, to be fair, Fox, you said that's that, what it was. Yeah, it was Felix the Fox.
You said they didn't have much charisma, but I think they had more than Caroline Flack.
No. Well, she's apparently half the team are down there tonight, so I wouldn't be surprised to see Paul Konchesky popping up on your screens tonight when she wins.
Didn't think we'd be covering this, did you? We came in to do the show this week. All right, cheers, mate. We'll catch up with you at the awards. Have you got your glad rags ready to go?
Yeah, got my black tie ready to go, so I'm looking forward to it.
Good stuff. All right, mate. Speak to you. Well, I'll see you tomorrow, but we'll speak to you on the show next week. Cheers. Okay. That is Jim. I'll get rid of him. Okay, Adam, Ipswich, tell us about this brilliant run you've been on. I think, was it 3 defeats in the last 16 games or something like that?
Yeah, no, and unbeaten in the last 6 away games. Obviously, the latest of those being a 0-0 draw.
Has this got any correlation
Saturday?
To Mick McCarthy's beard?
Well, you could say that the wise powers of his facial hair perhaps are working a trick.
Tom Huddleston situation. Until you lose, just keep growing it.
Yeah, and indeed, Dean Gherkin, the goalkeeper, sports a rather impressive beard as well, has to be said, which he's kept growing quite immensely beyond the
end of November. So your penalty decision at Forest, I thought it was a good decision. I thought the keeper tried to pull his hands away, but Steve Claridge on the Football League show didn't seem to think so.
Yeah, no, he was adamant that it was. Yeah. It's a bit hard to tell, really. It was one of those ones that you look at it from one angle and it looks like Cox has started going down before there's a challenge with Dean Gherkin, and then you look at it from another angle, which Billy Davis said, and he said he looked like he had a guilty look on his face, but it was probably because he thought, oh no, I'm going to get punished for this when I've done my best to get out of the way. It's one of those ones that 50% of the time it probably goes your way, the other 50% of the time it doesn't. So yeah, we weathered the storm, but we had a couple of chances ourselves, has to be said, but we also were indebted to Dean Gherkin for pulling off quite a couple of decent saves. But I'm very pleased with that result. A clean sheet at a side like Forest, especially at home, is no mean feat, I think, in this division. And performances in the last two or three weeks have been very encouraging. I saw them a couple of weeks ago at Charlton, where it was a bit of a strange game. We came out of the blocks and we were all over them for the first 5 minutes and scored, and then for the next 85 we looked solid and we looked organised and we just resisted what was thrown at us. I wouldn't say that Charlton are the best team in the division at the moment, we'll probably come to that later on, but then they followed it up with two pretty decent results against Blackburn and Huddersfield, and as I said, you know, six games unbeaten on the road, they just seem to have turned a bit of a corner in the last couple of months. But you never, like we said earlier on about other teams, you never know what's around the corner in this division. You could quite easily go on a run without winning for six games, as well as staying unbeaten for that length of time.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, what's around the corner for Ipswich is the visit of Gianfranco Zola's Watford. Should he still be there?
Wager.
Yeah, I think given everything we've been talking about, the doom-laden scenarios at Watford and the upturn in form at Ipswich, it's got to be a Watford win, hasn't it?
Probably has, actually. I mean, home form actually has been a little bit up and down actually for us. We've pulled off some decent results, but at the same time we've dropped quite a few points and conceded a few goals. Especially in games where we've actually scored early and then we've not managed to hold on. I mean, a couple of examples come to mind. Leeds and Leicester a few weeks ago, when Dave Nugent scored his 387th career goal against Ipswich in that game. It's a funny one. You were talking about it earlier on, that actually Watford away from home are a bit more, play a bit more freely and without pressure. It's the kind of game where the week before Christmas we might rotate a few, and you never know.
But then you do have Doncaster and Bournemouth away after that, and then Charlton at home on New Year's Day. So, you know, there are, and as well, you know, notwithstanding what we've just said, but, you know, if you look purely at the form table, Ipswich at home would certainly, McCarthy is going to be saying to his players, you know, this is a game we should be winning next week against Watford. So four fixtures there where a real opportunity to extend this run, and you could be sitting pretty come turn of the year.
We could be, and I think an important part of how that plays out is how he rotates the squad, and he's done it quite impressively actually for the last two or three weeks, where we've had a midweek game on the back of a weekend. He's actually rotated quite a few of the front six in order to keep them fresh. So you've seen the likes of Frank Newball getting a few more starts now after a prolonged period on the bench. You've seen the likes of Ryan Tunnicliffe occasionally drop out for players like Paul Taylor, and indeed I'm trying to think of two or three others now, but my mind's gone blank. Jay Tabb plays on and off, and there's a couple of other players who've come into the reckoning in recent weeks, Anthony Wordsworth being another one who's spent a bit of time on the sidelines recently, who are playing a bit more of a pivotal role. And I think Mick McCarthy recognises that from when he first took over about this time last year, that when we actually got to the Christmas period, there were a lot of tired legs. And I believe they played a game at home to Brighton, from memory, where they just looked completely out of it for the first half an hour because of the sheer weight and number of games at that time of year.
Going to watch that game very closely, see what happens on Saturday. Right, a few more thoughts on the weekend just gone, the last few days of action. After this, it's time for My Club celebrating 125 years of the Football League. We're giving fans 125 seconds to tell us all about supporting their club. And today, it's all about Peterborough United.
This is We Are Going Up. My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name is Jamie Jones, and my club at Peterborough United.
So, Jamie, can you remember the first time you ever went to London Road?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Back in May 1984, we drew 2-2 with Darlington. The odd thing about that game was the season had pretty much finished, and there were only 1,900 people in the ground that day. thankfully we get a few more in now.
Yeah, and which player has the honour of being the first player you ever saw score for Peterborough?
Trevor Quo, who was a local lad and a genuine club legend. He still is now. Yeah, really, really nice lads. It was a good game that day from what I can remember. Yeah, I was only seven though.
Building on Trevor, who's your favourite Peterborough player of all time that you've seen play?
Quite a difficult one. I mean, back in the early 90s, when we first got promoted to the second level, we had an excellent striker called Tony Adcock, who we managed to steal from Northampton, which is always nice to steal players from them. And he was my first real hero. I think of the modern era, it'd have to be George Boyd, who's just a marvellous servant to the club and a quite unbelievable footballer and part of the Holy Trinity with Mikael Smith and Aaron McLean. And now it's brilliant to see him in the Premier League with Hull.
Jamie, you do a Peterborough United podcast, don't you? And I'm interested to know, has that changed your experience of being a Peterborough fan at all?
It has a bit. I mean, we've been doing the podcast now this is our fourth season. We're going to finish at the end of this year. We figure we've probably done enough.
But is that a subtle hint to us?
No, at all. So we do get a lot of feedback from fans, and it does make you see things differently. I've been lucky enough to interview Darren McAntony a couple of years back, and that was a real experience as well. So it has changed things a bit, yeah.
Quick plug for it before the clock runs out on this air. What's it called?
Standing on the Glebe. Our next one will be available this Sunday after we hopefully beat Bradford at London Road.
Brilliant. Jamie, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you.
Cheers.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Right, we'll have another one of those on the show next week. But before we get started on our weekend review, though, I've got a quick email to read you. This is from Corey Doviak, who's listening in New Jersey, and it reads as follows.
Excellent.
Hi guys, just found your podcast by accident on iTunes, and I'm a huge fan. In the USA, we've got complete access to all BPL games on TV and some speciality shows on radio, but we've got nothing on the lower leagues. I'm not going to have time to go back and listen to the 105 episodes I've missed, but I'll be tuned in every week.
Excellent.
So, top man Corey, and this has got me thinking, we might have done this before. If we did, it was certainly a very long time ago. Let us know where you're listening to the show from. If you're an overseas listener, let us know where you are
around
the world.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because we can actually, not necessarily the downloads, but on the SoundCloud page, I was looking at some of the stats recently.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll be surprised at just how global our audience is. All over the place.
Yeah, I'm sure in the past when we looked, we had like someone in Mozambique listening. Yeah. Or
big in the Cook Islands.
Yeah, exactly. So there are two ways to do it. Go to wearegoingup.co.uk/contact, fill in the form there, or email us, wagyupodcast@gmail.com, and tell us which lower league side in your country we should adopt. Do that?
Do they even have lower league sides in
America?
Well,
I don't know.
There is a second tier, because MLS is no relegation from the MLS, yeah. But there is like another league. I think it's the National American Soccer League,
yes.
Which is like the second tier.
So maybe not in America, but if there are lower divisions and you follow like a lower side.
Or tell us which English club you support.
Yes, especially if you support someone in the Football League themselves. So let us know. We are going up .co.uk/contact or email wagyupodcast@gmail.com. Right, on to the weekend review then. Let's start in the Championship. DC, you've got something to tell us straight off the bat.
Yeah, well, just a quite amazing thing, really, on the face of it, from Saturday in the Championship. 11 games on Saturday afternoon. And 8 of those 11 games, the home team failed to score. 7 of those 8 went on to lose, with the exception of Forest, who, of course, drew 0-0 with Ipswich. It seems to me, this is just completely sort of an observation off the top of my head, I haven't looked into it in any detail at all, but it seems to me that away wins are increasingly a little bit more common.
Are away wins getting easier, Rude? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they might be.
Adam?
Well, as a team who recently had a bit of an upturn in form away from home, I think they probably are, and we touched on it a bit earlier on, didn't we? That teams seem to play with a little bit more freedom and expression when they're away from home. I don't know where... Maybe that's because we've got a load of teams in the Championship who get nervous in front of their own supporters all of a sudden because there's a weight of expectation. Mm.
Well, should we talk about some of the teams that did win away from home this week? Matt Phillips certainly didn't care about not celebrating, did he, against his old club?
I'm good to see it as well. Yeah.
Blackpool 0, QPR 2. So QPR going back top of the Championship.
He's picked up a bit, hasn't he, I think?
Yeah.
Matt Phillips of recent weeks scored a cracker.
I thought Blackpool created
ago.
Quite a lot in that first half, though, from the looks of the highlights.
They did look like they played
and when
well.
They conceded that first goal, they kind of... It fell off then at that stage.
Chances that I had.
There was a mini Classico as well in the North East.
Certainly was. Carranca against Oscar Garcia.
Brighton going great guns at the moment. 16 points from 21 now. And Matty Upson, who's getting married today as we record.
But is he going to have the headband on? What's he going to look like in the wedding photos?
Terry Butcher-esque. Yeah. He got caught, didn't he? Top of the Derby, another win. Steve McLaren revolution continues. 6 wins in a row. They won at Charlton, who, as you were alluding to before, are certainly struggling, aren't they, down there at the bottom. And Leeds winning as well. 3-0 at Doncaster in the big Yorkshire Derby. So they're up into the playoffs now. And Wigan appointing Uwe Rosler. The latest team to win, just winning 3-2 against Bolton a few hours ago as we record.
Yeah, a particularly impressive acrobatic goal from Nick Powell on loan from Manchester United. And interestingly, this is before the game, James McArthur came out and said that he's pleased to see, after the Europa League game against Maribor in a week, that Wigan have returned to the passing style of football that they were noted for under Roberto Martinez, which, you know, I think is quite telling. There was a lot of fans who were unhappy with the style of football that Owen Corr was playing, and clearly the players were too. And it just makes sense, surely, when they've, even though they were relegated, they did have that, you know, a good few years of embedding a philosophy into that football club, and the players were there, surely are more suited to playing that style. So it makes sense, you know, that Rosler is going to continue that. He had the reputation for it at Brentford, and, you know, I think you've got to watch out for Wigan now.
I recommend you go and read the bit that Daniel Gee did on our website called The Coyle Experiment, the blog that he did, to read about it from a Wigan fan's perspective. You know how she scored in that game as well as Nick Powell, don't you? Second week in a row. We didn't play it last week. A massive oversight. Good to see Neil Dans back on the target. Right, what are you doing breaking the studio? League One. Adam, much needed win for MK Dons. They were right down the bottom of the form table.
I mean, how have they beaten your racket, Wolves at home? Ridiculous.
But yeah, great victory, 2-0 at Wolves.
Yeah, and an absolutely stunning second goal as
Ben
well to cap that off. And well, that's two defeats in a row, isn't it, for Wolves?
So. Yes, of course, a bit of a wobble. Person that started off the defeat to rub insult to injury was the person looks like me, apparently.
Oh, yeah, Patrick, of course, that's right. Patrick Bamford with another. Mark Warburton has been appointed as Brentford manager. Who appoints a manager at 11 o'clock on a Monday night? We did the show last week. I got home, about to start editing it, and then it's like the whole of that chat is completely out the window now.
Yeah, but I think we did mention it briefly, I think, and I think it's an interesting appointment. He seems to have, he's one of these guys that's got a very good reputation within the game. I don't think outside of Brentford or in the wider sort of more casual fans don't really know who he is, but he certainly seems to be a progressive character. He's the guy that started and founded the Next Gen series, which was a sort of under 21 competition that's run for a few years. He used to be a youth coach at Watford. He's got experience of bringing through a lot of those good players that came through at Watford, such as Marvin Sordale, Sean Murray over the last few years. And he, you know, just seems to be very kind of one of these new breed of people that's, you know, got a lot of praise. I've seen, I think he was quite heavily involved in the book that Mike Calvin has written about scouting called The Nowhere Men. I think he was interviewed for that book, and I saw Mike Calvin praising him on Twitter as well. So, you know, he's not an expected appointment, but fair play to Brentford for going for him.
And he got an injury time winner, last minute winner in his first game, which is always good news. Jonathan Douglas with that goal, and they beat Oldham 1-0. Adam, I've got some Graham Wesley comments for you that you might be interested in hearing. Mm-hmm. Not you in particular, not about you. Port Vale 2, Stevenage 2, one of 4-2-2 draws in League One over the weekend, Stat fans. Now, Stevenage down to 10 men.
Who are the Stat fans?
I don't know. Stevenage down to 10 men.
Come on!
Michael Doughty.
Come on, 2-2 draws.
We're shown a second yellow. So Michael Doughty sent off. Graham Wesley afterwards said, I was staggered by the decisions being made out there today. I've got 7 cards for my team again. We're going to get another fine from the FA. For what, I don't know. One of the officials said to me, we're well aware of what's going on. And I beg the question, what does that mean? What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. There's a prejudice amongst the officials that's going against us. Your reactions, please. Is there a prejudice from Football League referees against Stevenage?
Well, I mean, he does have a reputation, doesn't he? And I do certainly think that reputations for players and managers and teams can precede them. I think in the case of someone, you know, I think Joey Barton in the past is a player that, you know, and people like Robbie Savage in years gone by. If you get Dennis Wise, if you get a reputation for being, you know, a dirty player or maybe in a diver in the case of Ashley Young or whoever it may be, I think subconsciously perhaps referees might be quicker to focus on you rather than somebody that they may not expect that behaviour from. But is Graham Wesley right in this case? I'm not sure. But you know something else about Graham Wesley? He was on the radio last week saying that he thinks you should get 4 points for an away win, which most of the teams in the Championship would probably vote for this week, given what we just said.
Definitely. Carlisle, Tom Lawrence, on loan from Manchester United, first ever senior game of football and he scored a couple of absolute beauties, didn't he?
Yeah, especially the one where he dribbled in and out of about...
This is a 4-1 win against Tranmere.
Mickey Tranmere. Via light.
So that's worth checking out if you can. Get an opportunity on the Football League show or wherever. And also, down there at the weekend, Jack Grealish on loan from Aston Villa to Notts County. 18 years old, he scored a brilliant goal for them last week. He scored another... I'd say kind of Maradona-esque goal this week in a 4-0 away win at Colchester.
Is this the one where he just let the goalkeeper make an idiot of himself and fall on the floor and he just walked it in?
That was the last one, I think, yeah.
But yeah, no, Notts County, I mean, that's two results in the last couple of weeks.
They've got Bristol City the next game.
Yeah. Well, I just think it shows the psychological impact of pulling a win out of the fire when you're in a bad run. Yeah. They've got a few loan players in. They got that win last week and they followed it up straight away with another thumping victory. So now all of a sudden, from in the space of 2 weeks, all those players would be on a high and looking the right way up the table.
We'd love to do some kind of in-depth League Two analysis, but it's just a massive bloody free-for-all still up there, isn't it? There's about 9 teams separated by, I don't know, I'm sure you'll be able to get the table up and tell me. In fact, here we go, I've got it in front of me. Oxford in first are on 37 and Morecambe in 9th are on 32. Yeah, so 7 points separating 9 teams.
And then you go down to the bottom as well and you've got Northampton and Torquay are currently occupying the two relegation places on 18 points.
We should mention Chris Hackett's penalty for Northampton, one of the worst bits of football of the weekend at Bury.
Oh,
awful
no.
penalty.
There was a worse bit of football at the weekend than that in the Shrewsbury game.
Tom Eaves.
Loan from Bolton.
Shocking. Yeah.
Awful, terrible almost miss. As bad. You see Adam Barrett a few weeks ago for Gillingham.
Naming and shaming now.
Interesting. Won't mention anything like Sam Sodgy-esque stuff going on there. But the bottom of the table is just as bad as the top. Northampton Torquay on 18 points. And then you've got all the way up to Mansfield, who are in 17th on 24 points.
Mansfield
away.
Are in absolute freefall, by the way. They haven't won in 11 games, but at least it wasn't 7 straight defeats, 0-0 at AFC Wimbledon at the weekend. Paul Cox could be next to go.
Yeah, well, and the two clubs below them, both with new managers, Richie Barker at Portsmouth and David Flitcroft at Bury, taking charge of his first game.
David Flitcroft's Army. Right, that is pretty much it for this week's show. If you'd like to get in contact, if you'd like to get in contact, at Wagyu Podcast on Twitter, or you can email via the website. Get in touch as well, like we told you to do. Let us know where you're listening. If you'd like to listen to the show, though, soundcloud.com/Wagyu Podcast. Or you can get us on iTunes. Please rate and review. Help us bump up the chart if you can on iTunes as well. And what else have I think that's pretty much it, isn't it? Adam, thank you very much for coming in.
A pleasure, as always.
Coming in from Reading to do this. And wish us luck at the FSF Awards.
Well, by the time you hear this,
if you're listening to this Tuesday or afterwards, you'll be able to know if we've won or not.
Look, let's be honest, we're not going to win. No. We're not going to win because we're going up against giants of the podcasting world. We're happy to be there. And I think more what we can look forward to, and indeed you listeners can look forward to, is the chaos that will ensue from us being in the room full of Premier League footballers and free alcohol.
Obviously, I know Pete Donaldson from the Football Ramble, and Pete came up to me on Saturday and shook my hand and said, "May the best man win" on Monday. So
he's going to be there.
I don't think he is going to be there, but I'm sure that the rest of them, they're all going to be represented. Yeah. It's going to be a good night. So we'll tell you all about that on the show next week. Wish us luck. And if we do win, we're pretty much not going to stop mentioning it for the next year, I would think. Right, that's it. We will speak to you in just over a week. So in about 7 or 8 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.